This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
Hey guys, it's Brittany Payton, and thanks for checking out another episode of The Suite Life, right here on the Bet Rivers Network.
Welcome into another edition of The Suite Life podcast here on the Bet Rivers Network. And today we have a little special treat. The woman who I think needs no introduction, but she is the most amazing person, my best friend, the person who I would not be here if it wasn't for her, my beautiful, amazing mother, Connie Payton. Gigi, also known as Gigi by my kids. So Gigi, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. This is your first appearance on the Suite Life podcast.
It is. You know what? I just feel so honored because I have listened. I have watched the other podcasts. I've listened. I've been here to see you do many others. And now I get to be on. So no, I am. I'm real happy. Thank you.
Yes, you are the star. I know. I was saying I could probably do so many podcasts with you because really you are the person that has all the stories, all the information, so much. But I just have to start because I think people who have met you or haven't met you, everyone loves Connie. You have such a reputation of your own, not just in the city of Chicago, but you know, around the league, the NFL, and as much as obviously the superstar that dad was, you have really become a kind of superstar in your own right too. How does that feel? I know you don't think of yourself like that, but how does that feel?
Well, you know what? It's truly a blessing. And, you know, I am who I am, you know, born and raised in New Orleans, the oldest of four brothers, no sisters. So I've always had to be, you know, sort of my grown, even before I wanted to be grown. And I don't know, I just always had this nature to, you know, want to treat people the way I wanted to be treated. And it's just who I am. And honestly, I am really pleasantly surprised, you know, when approached by people and how they not only, you know, how they feel about Walter, but even about me, because you know what, as far as I'm concerned, we were just ordinary people living an ordinary life. Yes, he was a gifted football player and did wonderful things on the football field. But then I knew, you know, that Walter, he did it. He didn't do it for recognition. He did it because he loved it. And so we just tried to have this real normal type of life. So, you know, it's a blessing. But I truly am surprised, you know, when people go, oh, say, oh, you're a celebrity. I'm like, no, I'm not a celebrity. but I do welcome it. I welcome it. So,
yeah. How would you ever have thought, like you said, you were born and raised in New Orleans. You were the oldest. You had three younger brothers. You were, you know, who kind of took care of them. And then this up in life, you know, dad getting drafted, being moved to Chicago. What was that like for you as you guys kind of began that life in Chicago and building your home there, which is where you still live?
Exactly. You know what? It was sort of scary, you know, early 70s or mid 70s, I should say. And, you know, I had family here, but they were all in Chicago. But to be honest, I had never visited any of the family here. And my thoughts of Chicago at that time were not that great because, you know, New Orleans is a city, but it's not that big of a city. And Jackson is a real small city too. And I never looked at myself as this real big city girl. So it was really kind of scary. And I remember on draft day, you know, when Walter were drafted, and I think there were like six or seven other guys drafted that year. And it seems like he was the only one that went to like this cold weather state. And I was thinking, my goodness, you're going to this big place. You know, and it's cold and snowy and, you know, I have family, but I don't really know them. And, you know, and, but you know what, honestly, it was probably the biggest blessing, honestly, once we got here and settled in, And then I got, you know, started meeting other wives and other people. And most of us were in the same situation. You know, our husbands were drafted, brought here from different cities and, you know, some small cities, some large cities. But most of us were in the same situation. So it was kind of easy, you know, to gravitate to, you know, other wives or girlfriends and stuff like that. But we were just lucky. We were just lucky that we always, you know, we settled in the right areas in Illinois. You know, our first home was in Arlington Heights. And we couldn't have picked a better neighborhood. We had wonderful neighbors, you know, some that just kind of took me under their wings. And this was, you know, before kids. And I mean, I learned a lot, you know, just, you know, it helped me to grow up. But some of my neighbors, and I remember one in particular, Sherry Thomas, who was our next door neighbor. She was like one of those moms that you would see on TV, you know, when you looked at Leave It to Beaver and some of those shows that I grew up with. And I would always say, gosh, you know what, when I do grow up, I want to be just like her as a mama when I have kids. So it was, you know, people like that made it easy, you know, to make the transition. And then too, I just think for us, the Bears, Chicago Bears was just a great organization, you know, too, and how they embraced Walter and our family. So, yeah.
Speaking of Arlington Heights, which is where you guys moved when you first moved here, and that was long before I was born, but it was such a great community, like you said, where you had, you know, the kids on the block and people running up and down the streets and, you know, riding their bikes or playing basketball. And so I was mentioning this, in my last podcast, I had talked to Tom Thayer, and he was just talking about Dad and how he would come, and everyone in the neighborhood, when he'd come visit him, would come out. So what was that like? Because I know for you, a lot of times people would just come to the door and and ask you if they could play with Walter.
Exactly. They would come to the door all the time and say, well, can Walter come out? Oh, no, Mr. Payton. Well, they referred to him as, can Mr. Payton come out and play? Because we had a basketball goal on the drive. And you know what? A lot of times he did. He did. If he was home and nothing was going on, he would actually go out and shoot hoops, you know, with the kids, or, you know, watch them ride their bikes and do tricks on their bikes. And so it was a real family community that he welcomed to. So, but it was a great neighborhood. It truly was a great neighborhood to, you know, to live in.
We were talking just about stories, and I was saying, gosh, like I said, you have all the stories, but what was Dad like as, you know, a player, an athlete, getting ready for games, getting ready for game day? Because again, I was not around at this time, but you always said that he was very superstitious and had a lot of routines that he would do.
Yes, he was. Well, you know, Walter was, you know, like summers were training and getting ready for training camp. And he was probably one of the hardest working people that I knew, you know, and how he trained. And we, Arlington Heights, and there was a hill that, you know, he found, and actually, it was actually a garbage dump, I think, in Buffalo Grove, where he would go and run the hill and training and preparing and getting ready for football season. So, you know what, for some reason, we just kind of always knew that he was going to have, you know, a good season because of how he pushed himself and setting his goals and stuff like that. But he truly was very superstitious. I think he wore the same pairs of football pants his entire career. I mean, and I think we have them somewhere. And over the years, there would be like holes or rips, and they would just have to sew those, you know, sew it up, you know, because he was not going to change the same, you know, exact same things he did to his shoes and how he spat the shoes up and stuff like that. He would have to drive the exact same routes, whether it was to practice, to games, and especially on game day, he would have to drive the exact same route. He wouldn't allow anybody to ride in the car with him on game day when he went to games. But, you know, and so I think he had to enter the stadium the same way. You know, I mean, put things the same, set things down the same. It was just hard to believe that, you know, with someone like him, that he would be so superstitious and he believed in it. And that he would just have to follow these rules. Because I remember one weekend, his mother was there, and she wanted to go to the game with him. And he was like, no, I can't. And her little feelings were so hurt because he was like, Mom, you don't understand. I have a routine and this is what I have to do every game day. And I can't break it now. And I love you, but I can't break it now. So you can't. And I don't think, for some reason, I wasn't going to the game that weekend or something like that. So she does, she would ride with him, but absolutely not. We had to figure mm-hmm. something out because yeah. he was just that superstitious. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Not going to happen. You like the same pants. I mean, the equipment team, I'm sure, had their work cut out for them, having to sew up pants each day and, yes. you know, filling in seams and whatnot. But even with his shoes, you know, we have a pair of his cleats and they're on display at the Walter Payton Center up at Hollis Hall. But even the shoes, I mean, there was like, there's no sole in the shoes. The soles were out. It was like running on the ground. There was no, it just was the shell of the shoe and that's about it. But he would wear those same shoes all the time.
Over, yes, yes. He would pull the insole out of his shoes so he could, you know, and I don't know truly what that was about. I really don't know what that was about. If it had something to do with gripping or he liked the feel of it, I don't know. But he pulled the insert out of all of his shoes. Every last yeah. pair of his shoes. Yes. Yes.
So it's like he was running barefoot on the ground almost.
Exactly. But it worked.
but it worked. funny story for those of you about those specific pair of shoes. My mom, for those that don't know, she does not like clutter. She doesn't like mess. I mean, she's an organized queen. Everything's got to have its place, needs to be tucked in. And not a lot is very sentimental. You're like, listen, if this is junk, it needs to go. Let's just get rid of it. Get it out of here. So when we were moving out of our home in South Barrington, where I had lived my whole life. So you would live there for probably, let's say yes. you were there 20 years. So a lot of stuff collected over the years. And you got to tell everyone about the shoes and what you did with the shoes.
Well, you know what? We were trying to move out and I found these dirty, what I consider dirty beat up shoes. And you remember in our garage, we had, you know, like a two-sided, we had like one side of the garage where he parked like his important cars. And then we had this walk. His
fancy cars.
Yes. Led to the other side. And so in the little hallway part, you know, he would throw things in there, whether those shoes or something from practice or things for training or whatever in those cabinets, because we had a lot of built-in cabinets. And of course, at this point, you're trying to pack like a 15,000 square feet house. And it was like, it was so much stuff. And I think I just kind of started feeling overwhelmed. And when I saw these dirty beat up shoes, I threw them in the garbage can. Because to me, that's where they needed to go, in the garbage can. They, as far as I was concerned, they didn't serve a purpose, you know. And I remember sharing this story with someone. Was it George at the time? Someone from the big, and they were like, "Well, what didn't you do with the shoes?" And I said, "Well, I threw them in the garbage can." And of course, these things were all just, we had things lined up. We didn't have anybody because I was going to have somebody come and pick all this stuff up at some point because it was a lot of stuff. And they said, "Well, do you still have the cans?" And I'm like, "Yeah, they're still in the garage." Just to, well, could you just do a favor and get the shoes out of there? And if you don't want them, we would gladly take them here. We would have them and we would keep them. And I'm like, okay, if you want those dirty beat up shoes, they're yours. So yeah, so now they're proudly displayed in the Walter yes. Payton Center in Lake Forest.
Yeah. Thank you, George. Yeah. And thank you for all those who told it. Are you crazy? You got to go and dig through the garbage and get those shoes right now. That is not something you throw away. And thankfully, we saved the day and they're still here. But it's just so classic of you, Mom, because you're like, I mean, they were shoes. He wore them. They're sitting here in a closet. It's time for them to go. You know, they're just like you said, there was no purpose served for them. But the shoes had been saved and they're back where they need to be.
Yeah. And you know what, too? And I think it spoke volumes to how I just looked at our lives. So it was just, you know, to me, with all that he had done and accomplished on the football field, he was just still my husband. You know, I met him, you know, my senior year of high school. So I guess I just never looked at him in the realm that everybody else looked at him, you know, with all that he had accomplished on the field and off the field. So again, it was just, you know, Walter, he worked out in his shoes, no big deal. You know, they can go away. But I am so thankful that I got the shoes out. And now, you know, and now I just realize how meaningful all of that stuff is. And, you know, and yeah, they're treasures. Yeah.
You know, you said you lived your life with him every day and you spent a lot of time, you know, you would go to all the games and, you know, be there for training camp and, you know, which was so different. I think it's so funny now because when you see guys now and the way they train, it was a lot different back in the day. I mean, when you guys would, when you'd send dad up to training camp, I mean, they were gone for a long time. It's not like, it was a lot more difficult back in the day. What was that like?
It was a lot more difficult. Honestly, I don't even think they realize how good they have it today. You know, when they would leave for training camp, they would be gone probably the entire month of July. They would at least be in training camp at least 4 weeks, at least all of preseason, because there were four preseason games. And for sure, they were in camp or they were not allowed to be home during the whole preseason. They would not, they would break camp the week before the first regular season game, which was normally the first week in September. So they were gone a long time. And you know what? And I always just felt like it was an intrusion, you know, to kind of go to training camp. And then sometimes, like when they were in Platteville and places like that, you know, and especially like when I had Jarrett and, you know, maybe we would, you know, go up and visit for a day when they had like a fancy or something like that. But I truly kept my distance and stayed away, you know, and because I knew that was their time. That was their time to train and get ready physically and mentally for the season coming up. So, you know, I was okay just, you know, being away. But yes, they were in training camp for at least a month.
Yeah. Yes. It's so funny. Like these guys have it. And now too, the way it's seen, you know, you see guys and they're tricking out all their, you know, where they're staying. They bring in the big TVs. They bring in all the stuff, the video games. So you have every single comfort you can think of is there. And it was not like that. But it's just funny to see the difference, you know, and how over the years, how things change, you know, even for dad, I always think for us as kids growing up, we were really lucky that we, you know, dad began and finished his career in Chicago. So it wasn't like he was traded. You had to uproot us and move us around or from school, you know, so we had that luxury where you were in the one place and that was your home and you guys stayed, where a lot of times now you guys are moving around and moving from state to state. And you know, one season you're here and then the next you're picking up your kids and you're moving somewhere else. So that doesn't really happen as often today as it did then. But I know for me, I was very thankful that we kind of had one spot and that was our home. And you guys were really able to put your roots down there. And I think that's one reason too. I feel like you guys were able to, you know, make such a change or a lasting impact in the city of Chicago, in the area, because that really was your home, your community, and where you guys felt, you know, it was like a big family for you guys. And we were able to do so much there.
Yeah. You know what? That I really felt like that was a blessing. Not to have to worry about being, you know, uprooted and moved away. And, you know, cause I saw it happen to, you know, some players and their families, and it was hard. It was hard, you know, you got to pack up everything and move and start over in some other city, you know, some other state. And I'm that kind of person too, that once I settle in, I am settled in all the way. I don't like a lot of disruption in my lifestyle and movement, you know, and so it was truly a blessing for me. And I think for us to know that, you know, that would be our forever home. We would be there, you know, we didn't have to, you know, we weren't scared after every season wondering if, you know, he was going to be here or he was going to be traded someplace else. You know, that never really crossed our minds. So that truly was a blessing, you know, to, you know, just to have that longevity in one place and stability. Yeah. Yeah.
When I was talking to Tom there the other day, we were talking a little bit about the Super Bowl. Now, for you guys, it was kind of a homecoming during the Super Bowl. And I think, you know, that team was a very special team. And throughout the years, you know, all the guys continuing to get together. But I think also the fact that, you know, Chicago has not won another championship in football since then, that team just has such a special place. I mean, people still talk about the 85 Bears, but what was that like for you? Going home, playing in your hometown of New Orleans, being there in the Superdome, but then the aftermath after that, once they won, I mean, I can only imagine what that was like that time.
It was truly the icing on the cake for me, you know, because I, you know, Walter had given his all for a lot of years before we got to that point of having that type of a team, that kind of a special team, you know, and for a lot of years, it was just basically, it was just him, you know, and you think about all of the rushing yards and all of the records that were broken and achieved with just on near determination, you know, from your dad. And spoke volumes about him as a person and as a player and how he pushed himself and was determined no matter what. So to finally, you know, get to have a team that strong and that dynamic and, you know, like you said, with all those personalities, but they were good. I mean, they were truly good. And to think that, you know what, this is what it's all about. This is what he's worked so hard for. You know, and he never said it, but this is just, these were just my feelings. This is it. You know, he deserves that Super Bowl ring before he retires. And I knew it was getting probably pretty close to him retiring, you know, up to that point. And so it was so much fun. And then to have it in New Orleans, my hometown, oh my goodness. The only bad part about that was that everybody then became your family and your friends, and everybody felt they wanted tickets and needed tickets to the game. And it's funny because, you know, talking about like tickets, you know, I think tickets, but what was it on the tickets? Like $65 or something like that for the Super Bowl ticket?
$65.
$65. I mean, it was really, but you know what? But even then you think like, no, I'm not buying you a Super Bowl ticket. I'm not spending that kind of money for you. And it wasn't even that much. But you know what? I guess it was all relevant that to that time, right? To that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was like 60 some dollars or 70. But anyway, it wasn't much. And it was just a regular game ticket, like a regular ticket that you would get for a regular season.
Not like a special, like, you know, now we have these fancy tickets and you get your lanyard. Well, you know, what's funny is now you don't, because, you know, we've been fortunate to go to Super Bowl every year because of the award. And we can talk about that. Yeah. But, you know, we used to get these pretty fancy tickets and everything would be kind of designed depending on the city. And I would collect them. I'd keep them in my lanyard and you get your little Super Bowl pin on there and you'd keep them through the years. And it was fun to see. And each year, I mean, that ticket price would go up because the ticket price would be on the bottom of the ticket. And maybe one year was like $2,000. And then we're like, oh my gosh, can you believe it's $2,900 for the ticket? And then it would go up to three. And then last year, LA, the most expensive Super Bowl ticket there was, face value on those tickets was like $4,500,
$4,600. Yes.
Right?
Yes. Exactly.
So when you look at it now, you're like $65 for the Super Bowl. And now, you know, $4,500 just face value, which a lot of people can't even get them like that.
Think about it. Yeah. Players weren't making the money that they make now, you know, really. And so, like I said, it was all relevant to that time period, you know, and, but yeah, it was perfect. But I tell you, it was probably one of the most nerve-wracking days because it's like, okay, we've made it. And you were just a baby because you were a baby. So it was nice because got to be there with mom and whatever. And, you know, Jared at the time, who was badness, got to go to the game. And, but sitting there with my father, I remember my dad was with me and, you know, and the Bears, you know, they took the lead from the very beginning. But then I'm sitting there the entire time thinking, well, what if they lose? And we don't make it again. We finally got here. We got to win the game, but we might not win the game. And I think we were winning the game the entire time. But in my mind, I kept thinking, but what if we don't win the game? And then he doesn't get back here. So all of this would be for nothing. And you know what? The game couldn't have ended enough. So I don't think I really got the full enjoyment out of it, you know, even though we were winning. But just the thought that what if we don't win, you know, and wanting it so bad for him. But yes, it was truly the icing on the cake. And then after that, it was like, didn't matter what happened anymore. He could have retired that day, as far as I was concerned, because this was the ultimate achievement, you know. So but it was fun.
A lot of people, I remember my first time watching that game and getting to see it on film and watch it on TV when they play some of those NFL classics. And you're right. I mean, you know what happens. I already know the outcome and how it's going to work, but you found yourself feeling like intense and in it. And there was a lot made about that game after Dad did not score a touchdown. When you were in it, was that something that you were worried about or even thinking about? Or was it more just like, okay, let me get through this and let them win and win a Super Bowl ring? And what were his real feelings after that? You know, was there some disappointment or was it made to be a bigger deal than it was?
It was definitely the latter for me. Just wanting him to get through it and win the game. Never thought about him making a touchdown or not making a touchdown. You know, my whole concentration was just get through the game and win it and get the Super Bowl ring. And I didn't think about anything else, but I did not, you know, I didn't even think about him not making a touchdown. And it wasn't until later on, after the game and listening to the media and people talk about it, and realizing that, wow, that's right. He made it this far and he didn't even make a touchdown. When you think about all the other touchdowns that he had made and how does he feel about it? And in reality, I think he was a little disappointed that he did not get to score and make a touchdown when he had carried the team for so many years, you know? And I remember because we left there and we flew straight to, we didn't come back to Chicago for the parade. He was in the Pro Bowl. So we flew straight, all of us, you, Jerry, all of us, Mrs. Long, we went straight to Hawaii for the Pro Bowl. And so he, I think part of him was happy that he finally had achieved that Super Bowl win. But, you know, but quietly, he really was, I think, a little, you know, just, you know, into his feelings about not, you know, getting a chance to make a Super Bowl. And I don't know if he...
To make a touchdown during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, make it a touchdown, I'm sorry. And I don't know if it's because the media made more out of it, you know, and made him focus on it even more so. But yeah.
Well, you know, you think about that and that team, and like you said, that cast of characters. And I was saying, you know, everyone still did remain like really close. You know, we did a lot of things and events and things together. But I know for me, I we just lived a regular life. You know, we got to do some cool things, but it was just, this was us, this was Mom, this was Dad, and this was just all we knew. But for me, it wasn't until Dad passed away that I felt like I really understood the magnitude of what he meant to people. Did you feel like that? Did you realize this outpouring that would come after he passed away? And truly, I mean, everything that he did on the field, but his legacy off the field is what has truly continued and has kept, I feel like, his name and his memory going all these years. And a lot of that was done by you. You know, we were still young, but you really took the reins and stepped into that role of, you know, running his foundation and also working with the state and working with the organ donation. And you were kind of cast into the spotlight where before you kind of not were in the shadows, but he was in the forefront. And then this all was laid on your shoulders and you continue that going, and you did it with such grace and such strength. And again, that's why I think people just love you when they meet you. They can feel it in your soul. But did you have any idea that that would be like that? And how was that for you fitting into those shoes and kind of continuing that on, you know, continuing his footsteps?
Well, first of all, I think Walter and I both were really surprised at the love and admiration that people all over the world had for him when he was ill. And when it was first announced that he needed a liver transplant. And honestly, and it just came up the other day about if we had kept any of those letters, because I think it was a room at his office that were full of letters from people, you know, just well-wishers and people saying, I will give you my liver and we love you. And we and how much he had meant, you know, people, it was just unbelievable. And I have goosebumps now just thinking about it. And we had no clue that what he did and how he played and the person he was, that he, that it went outside of Chicago, you know, and people all over the world. And the love, it was just so inspiring and uplifting. And, you know, to know that people love you and respect you for all that you are and all that you've done, and to have that kind of love from people that you didn't even know and you had never met, you know, to you know just want you to know that they love you and you know, and they're there for you. And for me, you know, I welcomed being, you know, in the background. That was fine with me. That was fine for me. I mean, I was, you know, I did a lot, you know, and I was blessed, you know, that I could be a stay-at-home mom and I could, you know, be at your schools and work at your schools and, you know, be, you know, just be there if, you know, as a room mom and, you know, as a helper and, you know, join some organizations and sit on some boards. So I had a great life and I was, you know, happy, but I just truly never thought about being in the spotlight. So it was really kind of different for me because I am that quiet storm, you know, the cracker, you know, I'm there mm-hmm. pushing everybody else, but I know I'm good back there. And at first it was really hard. It was truly, truly hard. And, you know, everybody just wanting a little piece of you and then I, in speaking and whatever, but I'm telling you, I realized it also made me realize just how blessed we were as a family, because I think at that time, and especially after Walter passed, and I thought how many people could say that they could probably walk up to any door in Chicago or the surrounding areas of Chicago and knock on the door and have them recognize me. It's like, this is Connie Payton. And how many that they would open their door and welcome me in and let me in. And I truly felt at that time that I probably could have gone up to anybody's door and say, hi, it's Connie Payton. And they'd be, oh, Connie, come on in. You know what I mean? and I'm like, how many people could say that, you know, that they have that kind of love, you know, from people. So with all of it, you know, with all of the sadness and all of the other stuff, you know, just to have that many shoulders that I could stand on and lean on and knew that I had that kind of love and support meant a lot to me. And it truly helped me get through a lot of days when I really thought, well, I'm just done. You know what I mean? To have that kind of love and that kind of support, and to still have that kind of love and support. You know, I'm grateful. And I just really realized that I'm truly blessed, you know? And so it made it easy, you know, to step into that role and have, you know, and to continue the foundation and do that kind of work. And we've been really lucky because we've met wonderful people over the years and people who, you know, we've never been a big foundation. It's basically just been you and the kids and I mean, you, your brother and I, but we've, you know, embraced so many friends who've come into our fold, you know, to help us do mm-hmm. our work, and kids over the years who we've seen now grow up and have kids of their own who just helped us, you know, continue to grow Walter's legacy. And, you know, and so it's, yeah, it was hard, but there's been so many blessings from all of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There really have been. We've been so lucky. We talk about that a lot. And yeah, you just, you know, to think all these years, and what has been able to be done and how his legacy has lived on. And a lot of that was because of Dad, but a lot of that really was because of you too. You really took the reins and jumped in, and the way people, like you said, rallied around you, but just loved you for the person that you were, the heart that you have, so caring, so much fun, even though, like you said, you're quiet and you don't necessarily need to be in all the social stuff, but when you are, you can be the life of the party. And people do, because you really are, you're just an amazing person. You spent a lot of time of your life really being a single parent. You know, I was only 14 when Dad passed away, and you had a lot on your shoulders. You had to continue to carry on his name, his legacy, and jump in those shoes. But you also had to jump in and continue taking care of two kids by yourself. And you did it amazingly. And like I said, you're the strongest woman that I know. And you're who I, you said you had those other women on the block who you wanted to be like when you grew up. You're the person that I've always wanted to be like, because they really don't get better than you. So before I start tearing up, because that's what I do, I don't know why.
Before you make me tear up.
No, truly, you are. Everyone who meets you absolutely loves Connie. I mean, I've moved to Arizona, and everyone here who's met you, same thing. They love Connie. They can't wait for you to come back. Because you really are such an amazing person, a pillar of strength, and you really epitomize grace. So thank you for that. And thank you for being on the show. I feel like we have so much more we can talk about, but we will leave that for another day. But always just great getting to sit here and talk and chat with you and hear the stories. And I thank you.
Well, you know what? Because let me just say this, you know, again, to thank you, Britt, you know, and I look at you and the person that you've become. And I've always said too, that I can remember some of my speeches saying that if I had to live my life over again, the person that I would want to be would be you, because I look at you too and how much you've had to endure and how you made it through and the person that you are. And I was just saying, you know, you were that person, you know, that you got all the beauty, you have the outer beauty, the inner beauty, you know, you're strong. And I look at you now as, you know, this wonderful mother and wife. So, and it does, and it lets me know that I've done my job, but just know that you're doing a wonderful job, you know, and I love you. And I thank you for not only being my daughter, but for being my best friend and allowing me that space, you know, respectfully, to be your best friend. So thank you. This has been fun.
I can't. The tears are flowing. So I love you always, as we say to each other. Love you long time. And thank you all the listeners for listening in to this episode of The Sweet Life. Yeah, we're going to end it on that note.